This conference will now be recorded.
Okay, good morning, everyone. This is Terry Hill. I'm speaking to you from frigid Duluth, Minnesota. Those of you that are in warmer climates, we're very envious. It's been pretty nasty here for quite some time. Again, our organization is the National Rural Health Resource Center. We're based in Minnesota, but we also have folks staff based in the South and in Utah, et cetera. We work with funding from the Federal Office of Rural Health Policy, and this is part of the Rural Hospital Performance Improvement Program, which has been in existence for 12 to 13 years. We recently had an evaluation of our program done by an independent evaluator at Michigan State University. And they discovered, they were able to document that there was $11 return in terms of rural hospital performance for every federal dollar invested as such. And I think that's partially due. I just want to compliment our staff, you know, Leslie and the folks, that Bethany and Rhonda in the field, Kate and everybody else on that. So I want to congratulate them for what I think is really outstanding performance. And as you folks know, we're moving into an era of documentation and movement into value, et cetera. So we're really pleased with the topic today, because emergency departments, one of the areas that are going to be absolutely crucial to establishing value into the future. Crucial because it's highly influential in terms of our HCAHPS scores, our patient satisfaction, et cetera. Crucial because it presents opportunity for greater performance, greater financial performance, better quality performance, et cetera, et cetera. And so the topic of the day, we're also pleased that we have a really excellent hospital here and a couple of folks that are representing that hospital. Chad O'Lind is the CEO of Pointe Coupee General Hospital, which is in Pointe Coupee, Louisiana. Chad's going to tell you a little bit about that hospital in just a minute. And we also have Elaine Hermy. I hope that's the way to pronounce your name, Elaine. If not, please correct me, who's the chief nursing.
Elaine Herm.
Herm. Okay. I should have got that in advance when I buy a but Elaine Herm is here as the CNO. And so generally, as you folks are maybe familiar with this format, which is to be conversational in tone rather than any sort of a formal presentation, we combined the hospital with one of our really excellent consultants. And again, one of the best consultants we've worked with over the years has been Mary Gill, who's been around about as long as I have, actually, lots of experience, over 30 years of experience in the healthcare industry. You know, I've done tons of work with Mary over the years. She's truly a national expert, somebody we turn to for advice on swing beds, emergency departments, et cetera, et cetera. And so Mary is kind of our consultant of choice here because she worked with Pointe Coupee with this particular project. So I could go on and on about Mary, but what I can tell you is that she's one of the most popular consultants that we have found and one of the most effective as well. So kind of with that, we're going to move to the topic of the day, which is emergency departments. Before we do that, I'm going to ask Chad to talk a bit about his hospital. Tell us about kind of the background, kind of where you were leading up to this project. Chad?
Okay, thanks, Terry. Just wanted to give a little bit of background on the hospital. We were built in the late 60s with Hill-Burton funds. We satisfied that Hill-Burton requirement sometime in the 90s, and we continue with that that charity care policy, even though that is satisfied. The hospital converted to critical access status in 2004, and that's been a wonderful program. I know the feds are kind of talking about making some changes with critical access, but we sure hope they keep that necessary provider status. And, you know, it's been a lot more reimbursement for us. We have a wonderful relationship with two FQHCs in our parish. We were instrumental in starting those FQHCs. We own the land and the buildings that those FQHCs are housed in. I sit on those boards. A number of our board members sit on those boards. So that's worked as a good relationship and just kind of a recommendation to other hospitals out there. I know some of them had problems with FQHCs, but being instrumental with starting one in the parish and kind of maintaining control of it kind of really helps out a lot. Recently, about 2 years ago, we went into a telestroke agreement with Ochsner of New Orleans. They provide 24/7 access to a vascular neurologist through telemed. We're averaging about 50 telemed patients annually. So about 50, the most serious cases, Ochsner will fly in a helicopter, pick up those patients and bring them back to New Orleans for immediate surgery. So that's been a good project that we're real proud of that. And we're confident that that has saved lives over the last 2 years. Just a little bit of stats on the hospital. Our patient census is around 10. Our ER volume is between 12 and 13,000 annually. We probably get about 85% of the ER visits in the zip codes of our service area. Mary did some work as part of the plan, and she expects to see a 6% increase in the need for those zip codes in the next few years. So we're kind of looking at how we can take on that extra volume. But so that's it in a nutshell, Terry, just about the hospital.
Thanks, Chad. I'm going to turn to Mary. And from a broader perspective, Mary, talk about both the challenges and the opportunities in emergency departments. Why is this an area of potential performance growth? And just a little bit of background of what you see as the larger problem.
Okay, thank you very much, Terry. I so apologize for everybody. I'm at a Sky Club at the airport. I've done one of my three legs this morning trying to get home. My husband doesn't think I'm going to make it because of the big winds in Maine coming, so wish me luck. Terry is very correct. The emergency room department is very, very important to a small rural hospital because most of the admissions come from the emergency room. Frequently how the community judges the rest of the hospital is based on their experience or hearsay regarding the emergency room. There's a correlation between ED experience and inpatient HCAP. J.L. Morgan Associates, I don't know if you know him, he's a vendor for all sorts of caps, but he's been doing a lot of looking at how different things correlate. And one of the things that he found out is on the average, when a patient comes from the emergency room, their HCAP score is lower than if they were directly admitted. So that, again, says that is an important place for us to work at for patient satisfaction is in the emergency room. Unfortunately, even we have all of this, many hospitals rarely look at the big picture and how many departments impact the ED one way or the other. A lot of people think that it's just the ED crew that is not doing the right thing, but it's much, much more than that. So with the patient satisfaction, most causes of dissatisfaction in EDs are based on the registration process. The total length of stay, the turnaround time, encompasses processes from time of the door to triage, time to provider, time for the ancillaries and the results, time to admission, time to obtain discharge orders. So all of this is all processes that we look at when we do an ED analysis and how can we best change those processes. How they were treated, how they were kept abreast of what is taking place, and why the wait. Did the physician examine them? These are all things that we look at. We have control of this more than we think, and we can manipulate their perception. And in this point, I'm talking manipulate as a good thing. We can manipulate their perception if we worked on all of the things that I, you know, talked about above. And then naturally the environment, and last but not least, the follow-up process and outcome with the transition of care, with, everything that's coming down the pike as far as ACOs, CCOs, call them whatever you want, the emergency room is going to be a very important component to that. And as a matter of fact, I foresee that, and I'm not the only one, that small rural hospitals, it could very well be that what we're going to have is an emergency room. We're going to have observation. We may have a few inpatient, but that's not going to be the biggest thing because we have so many, it's so difficult to meet the criteria for inpatient. And as we well know, there's a new regulation that if they don't need at least 2 midnights, and the doctor doesn't document that, we don't get to charge Medicare for inpatient. So that's getting to be much, much more important. And naturally, I like to believe that unless OIG really, you know, cuts our legs, that a swing bed will always be very something great for the small hospitals because of that transition of care. We need to have a good, high-quality teams to do transition of care. So the impact of a well-functioning or broken revenue cycle also affects an emergency room in the hospital. You can have the best ED in the country, but if the revenue cycle is broken, there'll be delays in coding and billing and then lower delayed revenue. So for a good revenue cycle for the emergency room starts with good documentation, like Terry was talking about, from the provider and the nursing staff. Charges for procedures and supplies, appropriate IV documentation, CDMs that needs to be updated, and because that impacts the revenue, it prevents lost charges, and then Medicare compliance is very important to have a good CDM in place for that. And then dissatisfaction due to errors in billing or late billing. I remember usually when I go in a hospital, if I can interview the community informally, I do so. And this one hospital is a great little hospital, great, really pretty much great ED. But I was there for an ED assessment because the ED satisfaction survey was keeping down the full satisfaction of the entire hospital. And they were bonus on the aggregate of satisfaction. So everybody really wanted to help us fix the ED. But one of the things at the bed and breakfast that I was staying at, I said, tell me about your hospital. So they tell you everything that I just said, except the one thing that she hated to use them and that if she could, she would go someplace else just because her bills were so late. And she hated that because she was very organized and she'd get the bill and she would barely remember what it was all about. So all in all, just to say that this is not just about an ED manager. It is a full team. The process that we use for an ED analysis consists of, we agree on a scope of work, and then we ask the hospital to develop a team and agree on a team leader that will be the contact. And then the data request and review, and that's about utilization, percent of admission transfer, the quality indicators, the process indicators like time efficiency, patient satisfaction surveys, E&M coding, all of that type of stuff that we look at. It's really the full ball of wax. And then on-site for interviews, it's with the CEO, the CNO, DON, the ED manager, the ED medical director or designee, the business office director, coding director, registration director, local physicians, ancillary directors pertinent to ED, care manager, UR, ED nursing staff as applicable. And that data analysis is combined with the interview outcome and then with a strong emphasis on accountability. I am more determined than ever that unless we really have a great understanding of what accountability is all about and who's going to be accountable for what, it just does not move the needle. So I'm starting to even push that even more so. And then we look at the core measure processes. I do believe that CMS is at one point is going to be looking at even the critical access hospitals as more for the core measures and the patient satisfaction for our ED. And then you get a preliminary report, and the second on-site visit is to present and discuss findings as well as staff education regarding everybody's role and other education based on findings. For instance, I usually end up offering observation because it is, number one, it keeps changing. I keep having to update my presentation on that, but 99.9999% of the hospitals do not truly understand all the concepts about observation and how to manage it. So I've now added that to my ED assessment. And then together we develop an action plan. And the action plan and final report is sent to the CEO and the team. And we do a follow-up call to discuss questions. And then we do another follow-up call within 1 to 2 months to discuss the status and question and answers. And they did they hit a wall and what can we do about that? And then I remain on as a phone call or email away, you know, for technical assistance. The contract usually says 4 months, but unfortunately I tend to, okay, yeah, it was a year ago, but, you know, if you have a question, sure, I'll help you. Last but not least, what was very important is how did the consultation go at Point Coupé? They've asked me to, you know, talk about this. It was a very involved CEO and the CNO. The CNO is very knowledgeable and motivated to attain high quality in every hospital department. So that helps an awful lot when somebody's on board right from the top, when we have two people from the top that are really into this. And though it's a small hospital, the directors were not as used to working as a team as you'd expect. And, you know, I've already told Chad and Elaine that I would be, you know, sharing this. And, you know, they kind of agree and they're going to be talking to you a little bit more about this. But it was very fascinating to see how receptive that they were, and that they were all very willing to put their best foot forward. And when we had meetings together, they really participated. And so I really enjoyed that a lot. There was a high participation in the action plan development. They were not afraid to ask questions when applicable. And again, the CEO and the CNO were very motivated to achieve positive outcomes. So it was, for me, a very good experience. And hope I get to work with them some other time also. So I truly enjoyed working there. I'm going to pass it on to you guys, and I'll stay online as long as I can until my next flight, but I'll go mute. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Mary. And again, that's one of the reasons that I think you've heard why our RHPI program uses folks like Mary, is that she's very much mission-driven. She genuinely loves rural hospitals, and she goes over and above, you know, what could be expected of a consultant. She mentioned a couple of things I just want to emphasize here. Within our program, the intense involvement of the CEO and the CNO, or where appropriate, other department leaders, is absolutely crucial, and it becomes a prerequisite for participating in our program. One of my favorite quotes is that the currency of leadership is attention. And in essence, what you're going to find with Chad and Elaine is they put their attention on the emergency department. And I couldn't agree more with a number of things that Mary said here. Last summer, just from a personal standpoint, I kind of went through a bout of Lyme's disease, visited my local hospital here, which I have to go to because my primary care physician is basically affiliated with this hospital. The emergency department visit was so horrible. It was like 4 hours. I was feeling bad, et cetera. I very seriously considered, in fact, almost switched my primary care provider, who I really, really like. It is when you're sick, when you really need the support to go through needless processing, through everything else that was there, was kind of one of the most negative, and it just something that could have been different. And again, that's why I'm personally interested in this issue. And I would also agree with Mary, it is going to be essential into the future as we start to quantify and basically make sure that we're documenting our value as well. So with my little editorial comment here, I'm going to turn to Chad and Elaine again. Tell us a little bit about why you chose this particular emphasis, you know, rather than something else, for example. Chad and Elaine?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, we were having issues in our emergency department, and the title is Emergency Department Review, but it was actually Emergency Department / Outpatient Registration Services, because we were really having some bad issues going on. It was kind of inefficient. With the ER itself, we had gotten up to about 2 hours and 19 minutes from patient arrival to discharge. One thing Mary said she would like to see in her review is getting that under 2 hours. Our patients leaving before an exam was a little bit higher than we liked. We had a joint waiting room for both ER and outpatient, joint registration desk. So that kind of contributed to patient confusion coming in. Sometimes we would have some ER patients that came in and would just use a sign-in sheet that we had and just sit down, and some of them were a little bit too critical to just be waiting, and we weren't even truly identifying them as ER patients. We had done a master plan right before we worked with Mary, and part of that took a look at our square footage and what we need for the volume we were doing. We had 3,200 square feet in the ER, and the recommendation is that we have 8,300, so we needed well over double what we had. We have six patients in double patient rooms and two in private, so there was a privacy issue there. We didn't have a seclusion room for patients needing mental health intervention. We had some issues going on with observation. Mary had made some recommendations through her review that our nurse staffing in the ER was a little bit low. Nurse staffing in the inpatient area seemed to be a little bit high, so we needed to take a look at that. There was some billing issues, some denials we were seeing. We needed to take a look at how we were charging for observation. So many different areas in the ER and the outpatient. I think we had some HIPAA concerns with people coming in and using that sign-in sheet. Our ER clerks were having to get up from their desk, walk around, see who was next on that sheet, call that patient. Sometimes we'd have a patient come in late and scratch out a name and write their name in, so somebody would get skipped, and we wouldn't realize that till 30 minutes later when they were fussing about not getting treated. So we knew something needed to be done, especially in outpatient registration. Tried some different things over the years. None of them seemed to work. So we kind of felt like we really needed to revamp that whole thing. Elaine, anything to add on our problems?
Well, I guess I could go right into what we did in our waiting room. We actually built a wall to separate the ER patients from the outpatients, because like Chad was saying, having them all sitting together, there was a little confusion. And, you know, the majority of your outpatients that come in for the community for lab work, they're well, as opposed to your ER patients. So here we had our well patients sitting with our ER patients, and that there was just some confusion about who belonged where. So we built a wall actually to separate the waiting areas. And then we, because like Chad has already said, our physical plant is well maintained, but the hospital was built in 1969. So, you know, we always have challenges as far as patient flow because of the age of the hospital. And so in placing that wall to separate the two areas, then we had a designated registration clerk for the ER area only. And she could monitor the entry of ER patients. We had the signage up. We put new signage up that directed patients where they needed to go as far as ER and outpatient. Of course, future plans, as Chad was saying, we are going to renovate our ER in the future and change that whole triage area. But for now, just having that registration clerk watching the door and notifying the nurse immediately when an ER patient presents has improved our patient satisfaction as far as ER is concerned immensely. Also, the clerks, we do more bedside registration as far as our ER is concerned. And that also, we get those patients back as soon as they hit the door. And then if the ER clerk will come to the bedside and complete the registration. As far as the outpatient side, and I know this, the major focus is on the ER, but because these two areas are side by side, we were having some difficulty with patient moving on the outpatient side for ER, for lab and radiology. So I researched what type of flow systems were available out there and looked at several systems, and we decided upon a kiosk type system where the outpatient enters the area. Again, there's signage to direct them where to go. They touch the kiosk. They press whether or not it's an appointment or not an appointment. And then we have television screens mounted. And with visual and verbal cues, they are directed to a registration window. From there, they are registered for either what they're here for, their lab or their radiology. Then, again, with the verbal and visual cues from this system, they're directed to a certain waiting room if they're here for lab and radiology, or to another area if they're here for lab only. This same system, of course, lab and radiology have the software, so they are aware immediately when the clerk has registered a patient. So then as the patient moves through the system, we're able to get them into the radiology area or to the lab area very quickly. And we keep track of our times. In fact, some of the times here as far as registration to, we have like 1.3 to 2.39 minutes. With that, and also radiology and lab personnel put in all the orders now as opposed to the registration clerks. So that also has improved the process because there's no mistakes as far as orders are concerned. We also had a problem in that outpatient ER area with the radiology patients that had scheduled appointments such as mammograms and MRIs. Well, again, with the kiosk system, they can press I'm here for a scheduled appointment, then radiology is aware their appointment is here and they can manage those ER radiology patients, the inpatient radiology patients, and the outpatient scheduled appointments in a timely fashion. So that was really one big plus that helped us in that whole ER outpatient area as far as moving patients through those areas, having that ER clerk designated for just ER, and then having this kiosk system for the outpatient area.
Go ahead, Elaine.
Well, I was thinking more about our patient satisfaction, as Mary was speaking to earlier about, patient satisfaction in the ER and communication. We also, there's a lot of standard eraser boards on the market, but we actually developed our own. And it's sort of like we have one in each ER room and per bed. And we circle if they're to have lab, what's going on with them? Lab's coming, radiology's coming. It's sort of just, and the patient's looking at that, and maybe it's a stressful time, and maybe they didn't hear what our plan of care was for them, but we write it on that board so they are aware of what is going to transpire minute by minute. And we have found that for the ER patient, this has been a great patient satisfaction.
I wanted to mention in creating the new ER room or dividing the two, We were able to take another room that was previously the x-ray file room. Little by little, we didn't need the x-ray files anymore, the x-rays. We probably went PACS around 8 years ago. So we were able to create a waiting room there, register the patients, and definitely the x-ray patients would go into that new waiting room. The dual x-ray and lab would go into that new waiting room, and also some of the labs. So we were concerned that we were just going to fill up that outpatient waiting room when we created that division. But having that new waiting room did a lot to increase that flow. And patients are more satisfied when they're moving through the system. If you send them back to the same chair for some reason psychologically, they're not crazy about that. They move on to the next waiting room. Some reason they like that. I don't hear near the complaints I used to hear with outpatient. So we're happy about the efficient. We're happy about the patient satisfaction. One other comment about Elaine's, the Q flow that we put in is patients, you know, a lot of them have been in here in the community 30, 40 years, and they're used to a certain routine, and we had to put up a lot of signs showing where outpatient and ER was, but people aren't reading signs. They're just kind of walking in and going to the place they've always gone to. So we had to station that security guard right there for a number of months saying, okay, you're here for ER or outpatient, and direct them to the appropriate spot. The Q-Flow system was a little difficult for some of them to use at first, so the guard would be right there helping them. So that all worked out real good, and as I mentioned, the patient satisfaction is terrific. I see people on the street now, and they just say, oh, I love the new outpatient system you guys have.
Mary mentioned a bit about the revenue cycle management or charge master. Have you given any attention to that, or is that next steps? Or tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, she did mention a charge master audit, and we did go through that approximately a year ago. The person that came in was Sally Harrison. Looked at the way we were charging in the ER and really throughout the whole hospital. Chargeable supplies versus non-chargeable, use of modifiers. We changed a lot of ways we were doing that. Tracking denials with the registration clerks, seeing who was making the most errors. You know, one big thing we uncovered with the errors was initially the registration clerks were entering the lab tests as they came through. And which is what CPSI told us to do when we first started. That patient would go on to the lab, and sometimes there were problems with the test because you had people that were without a strong clinical knowledge putting in that test. So now we changed that procedure, and it's just sent over to the lab through the system as a generic lab order, and the med tech or phlebotomist there actually inputs the correct test. It's something we did for so many years, and we look back on it and say, well, why didn't we think of doing that? You know, it's one of those simple fixes that just did a wonderful job for our billing and our errors. Let's see, what else did we look at with the charge master? Some of the things we've done with the charge master has brought down our AR days. We were up around 70. Let's see, our net AR days now are below 40. The national median is right at 60. So we are under the national median, national average for AR days. So we feel a lot of this review and our charge master review and a lot of the work that Mary did had a positive effect on our AR days.
Chad, I'm very pleased to hear that because there was a lot of issues with the revenue cycle that were identified, and including, you know, the lab not really knowing what they were doing the lab for or whatever. So I'm very pleased that you guys have achieved such a long road. The other thing, I have to leave, but I'm also very impressed that you guys, you know, I haven't read the action plan for a while, but I do remember a lot of the things like definitely the registration that was great, but the other is immediate betting. It looks like you guys are doing that whenever possible. The whiteboard in the rooms. I mean, those are all things that I'm very impressed. You guys done do that.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I'm always happy to see those AR days come down. I definitely look at them every month. A lot of our financial indicators are so much better. Our days cash on hand is over 300 now, and I think the national median is about 100. So pretty much across the board, I am very pleased with our financial indicators.
And I think this speaks to another concept here that we find is very relevant for rural hospitals, that these pieces fit together. One of my favorite management gurus basically said that, in essence, hospitals are the most complex organizations in the history of mankind. That was a guy named Peter Drucker, who's this is very complex, folks. The job of running a hospital, big or small, is immense. And in essence, what you find is, as we've already seen, emergency department is linked into the financial performance of the hospital, which is linked into the age caps, which is all kind of linked together. And to address one issue very often will affect another. One of the things we also know is that periodically we do financial summit meetings where we bring in the top kind of business and financial people from across the country in rural hospitals. And one of the things they tell us is that days in accounts receivable may be the single biggest indicator of how efficient your hospital is. If you've got your days down to about 40, like Point Coupe has, you can bet that there's efficiencies pretty much throughout the hospital. Not only do you benefit from the additional days of cash that you're receiving, which can sometimes be, $500,000 if you take it from the industry standard or slightly above down to 40, but you're also benefiting from better HCAP scores. There's pretty strong indication that your department managers understand what they need to be doing to document that they're being held accountable, et cetera. So I think here we've got the profile of a hospital that basically has done a lot of good work, has kind of been, this is not the first time they've participated in our IHPI program. And again, we're particularly proud of the outcomes of the hospitals that we work with. One of the things we didn't talk about is did, given this entire effort, did your number of emergency department visits go up as well? In other words, did the community notice, and were they more inclined to come into your hospital?
Our ER visits did go up, and I'm looking at my notes, and I can't even find the numbers. Here it is. It's about 6% since our review that the ER visits went up. We would like to think that's due to some of the changes we made, some of the efficiency. I would think when there's a backlog getting into the ER, some of the patients are going to leave. The word's going to get out that you have to wait too long. Some things have changed in Baton Rouge with ER services. We're about 30, 40 minutes from Baton Rouge. So in the future, we really expect to see an increased usage of our ER volume because, if our time from admit to discharge is under 2 hours and we're only 30 minutes from Baton Rouge, I could see some people driving out here to use this ER instead of some of the urban hospitals.
One thing we do, Terry, is if we are extremely busy in the ER, the charge nurse in the ER for that particular day will actually walk out into the lobby and say to the patients, we understand you are here. We have an emergency situation right now. Please be patient with us, and we will get you back as soon as possible. And that's always a big positive thing with the nurse going actually out into the waiting room and communicating with the patients that are waiting. So we, they know that they are important to us and that we are going to get them back there as soon as possible. So that has helped also.
And I think that, you know, that's an advantage of a smaller rural hospital. We've really got to, you know, make sure that we maintain that personal touch that kind of separates smaller hospitals from the bigger hospitals as well. There's so much that we have going for us as we're moving into this new value-based system, et cetera. And, you know, because HCAHPS now have become a part of the funding formula for the bigger hospitals. In other words, they're going to get paid more, particularly if they're in an ACO or if they're in, in a pay-for-performance system, which most of them are in right now. They're going to get paid. The big hospitals are going to get paid more for higher HCAHP scores. So rural hospitals have an advantage. Our scores on average are better. But in essence, we've got to keep upping our game all the time because the competition for patients is going to be more acute as we're moving forward. And that personal communication, again, I can just tell you because, you know, it really does all come back to the patients themselves. And when you're sick, you know, it's always great to have courtesy and to be, you know, be supported by the staff. But when particularly when you're sick, you really, really appreciate that. And I think that what you folks have been able to do with that emphasis, and again, it should be enough just to say, well, you'd expect that from everybody. But if you don't embed it into your processes, then what's going to happen is there'll be breakdowns. And a single breakdown, a nurse has a bad day or somebody at the front desk has a bad day, and now you've lost the patient. And of course, as you know, in small little rural communities, they talk, you know, people talk to each other, et cetera. So,
Terry, I'm going to have to go get my flight, but I apologize that I can't stay for questions and answer, but could you please make sure that the participants get my email if they have any follow-up questions?
Mary, we will do that.
Yeah, thank you very much
for participating with us, and good luck getting home.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Just you know, one or two more questions here. In terms of as you're looking forward, Mary talked a bit about what happens so often in rural hospitals is that we have a lot of different silos out there. One department doesn't speak to the next department, and that's, I think, a way bigger problem in the bigger hospitals than the small departments. Mary Mensch brought that up as something that you guys could probably make some improvement in. What thoughts do you have on that? And tell us, are you moving in that direction, or what are your plans there?
Our plans toward just sustaining this?
Well, kind of that, but also the, you know, kind of working your departments, working more as cross-sectional teams. I thought I heard Mary talk about that as something that you might be able to improve on.
We've learned a lot through the experience. We've pulled all of the department managers together, as well as a lot of other people underneath. The hospital has not been Joint Commission accredited since the 80s. Right now, we've decided to pursue Joint Commission accreditation. We plan to get that in the spring. So the full hospital staff has been working together. We've put a joint effort together, group cooperative, something we're trying to do together like we've never done before. And it's been a lot to go through. I'm sure everybody, you know, this Joint Commission knows what's involved. So I'm very pleased with the way everybody has worked together on this effort. The Joint Commission effort, and, you know, of course, the ER and outpatient, we've done a lot to resolve those issues, and I think they've done well, and they've done well to sustain the betterments in the hospital that we've had since Mary's review.
Terrific.
I think one thing also that we did, Terry, is we sort of revamped our performance improvement program a little bit, in doing so, we pulled the department managers together more, and we asked for everyone's input as to What are your thoughts on performance improvement? Where do you want your department to be? And so in doing that, the person that's over performance improvement, she has worked really hard individually and as a group with all the department managers to make sure that we're capturing all that data that we need. And once we capture that data, then we look at what we need to do, if what areas we need to improve in. And she, the person over performance improvement, she really tracks outcomes. She tracks where we are. She'll go back to that department manager 3 months later and say, okay, you know, how are we doing with this issue? And so that's been a big help, too, and as far as also in helping us prepare for Joint Commission. Now, something else Mary did and really made a huge impact for us, and she briefly mentioned it when she was speaking, was observation. When Mary came here, we were really underutilizing observation status. And like Mary said earlier, it's just an area that it's a lot of people just don't understand and know a lot about. And she helped me in developing what we called a cheat sheet. And on one side of the sheet, it spoke to inpatient criteria, and on the other side, observation. And I spent quite a bit of time with the ER physicians and actually with our own attending physicians here at the hospital going over that cheat sheet so that those patients that, you know, we had patients that would come to our ER and, you know, they didn't meet inpatient acute criteria per se, so we'd send them home, but then they were back the next day, you know, and Mary focused us in that direction as far as observation and if these patients would have been appropriate. So through a lot of education, through that use of that cheat sheet, physicians still go back and refer to it. We have definitely increased our utilization of observation. And so that's been a major plus for us also. We also feel with her guidance that as far as the two midnight rule is concerned right now, the case manager here has a very good handle on observation, so that's not really an issue for us. We feel comfortable. We know we're doing the right thing as far as observation is concerned.
Terrific. Yeah, that's, you know, one of the things I was really impressed is that the Louisiana Critical Access Hospitals got together a year or two ago and really took a look at the entire environment for rural hospitals and critical access hospitals, made a, what I think is a really very, very excellent observation about what is going to be valuable in the future, and then speculated about how to basically build that value so that they're going to be successful. And you folks have mentioned a number of things that came out of that white paper that Rebecca Bradley and Eric Schell worked on, and kind of represented the joint work of all the critical access hospitals. We do have challenges moving forward here, you know, but I think with this kind of work and the documentation, the value that you folks have been doing, and hopefully, you know, hospitals throughout the Mississippi Delta are either beginning to do or are already midway through doing, we're going to be successful kind of moving forward into that future. There is going to be, we're very concerned about a swing bed IG report coming out, but we're going to need to make our way through that. At least in this particular case, the last IG report kind of caught us totally unaware. Those, you know, advocates, people close to policy, and I've been very close to rural health policy for years, really were caught unaware. We're expecting another IG report on swing beds. So it's just another thing to be expecting. I think Mary referred to that as well. But again, just really excellent work. And, you know, we're proud to have worked with you on this project. Kind of as a final comment moving forward, what do you folks see as maybe your biggest challenge, you know, over the next several years. Any thoughts on that?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, we expect to see an increase in ER volume. We did have that master plan that we did, and we identified that we really needed some more ER rooms. To use the term of the person that did our master plan, he said, you need more space right here in this prime real estate area. So what we decided we needed to do is build a new lab, build a new storeroom. We're going to move those right behind the hospital. They'll still be adjacent to the ER, and the phlebotomists and med techs will still have access to that ER. Expand x-ray into that, what's current the lab area, create four new ER rooms in what's currently the storeroom, and create a completely new outpatient registration area in what's part of the storeroom too. So we'll be moving the storeroom, the outpatient registration, completely away from ER. And we look forward to doing that. We think it's going to be a more pleasant outpatient experience. We also have a 11,000-foot medical office building we hope to have completed within a year and a half, 2 years. So we have five isolated late doctors, each in individual offices. We hope to be able to plan to be able to combine those all into one office, and that will be connected to the hospital and the lab. So we have a lot of renovations right on the near horizon just to take care of the foreseeable future, the increases we think we're going to see. And, you know, to expand the lab was so tight in the little area they were, we knew we had to build a bigger lab. So we're doing that, and we look forward to having all of that done. It's all going to be very welcomed by our lab and ER staff.
Something else, too, Terry. You know, as far as our emergency department is concerned, and I know critical, this is true in all critical access hospitals, we don't have specialty. And so a lot of times, I mean, we have internal medicine here. And of course, as Chad spoke to earlier, we have telemedicine for a telestroke program. But, you know, we do a lot of transferring to your larger hospitals and your urban areas. And so I always want us to be speaking the same language. I want our core measures. I want us to, you know, when we're transferring that patient from this critical access emergency department onto a large facility, when we get on the phone, I want that receiving facility to think to themselves, wow, this little critical access hospital, they know what they're doing there. They have put everything in place for the care of this ER patient. So we'll be ready to receive them, and everything that needs to be done will be done for that patient. So that is something that it's a challenge for an ER in a rural area. You know, we've got to keep up. But that's something that I think is very important for emergency departments also.
Very well said. And we could have probably had another, we could talk probably another hour about the implications and the possibilities of the telemedicine program, et cetera. We believe that's going to be huge. It's going to open up significantly because finally, besides the reimbursement, under an accountable care organization formula, it's just going to be almost a natural kind of an outcome or what we're going to see out of our accountable care organizations as well. We have a few minutes left. You can either ask questions directly. We've got a couple of minutes. If you want to ask a question of either Chad or Elaine, you can hit star 2. Or we will send out contact information for Chad and Elaine and Mary. Leslie, expect something from Leslie, which will be accompanied by our evaluation. Do give us feedback on this. Again, we're in just like the hospitals, we have to walk the walk on this. And so we're in a constant improvement mode. And again, I want to thank our folks, both Chad and Elaine and Mary, for being a part of this call. I've learned a great deal, and hopefully it's been helpful for everybody on the phone as well. Any last questions? Anybody want to ask a question? Remember, star 2. Again, don't hesitate to contact. And Mary is such a great resource, too. So if you just have questions about that or want to find out more about the cheat sheet, again, do contact Mary or contact Elaine and Chad as well. You guys did a great job. And again, I really thank you for sharing your hospital story with us. I want to remind folks that we have another webinar scheduled for November 15th at 11 a.m. And I'm actually going to be a part of that. One of the things that we did as a national center is bring people together last June on this whole issue of critical access hospital and rural hospital performance improvement. And we tried to identify what are the handful of things that rural hospitals can be and should be doing kind of moving forward kind of into the future. And we put together, then we published a blueprint kind of based on everything we've learned over the years, the consultants like Eric Schell and a variety of other hospital folks participated. And this blueprint basically is available both online, but I'm going to be speaking about it on November 15th with Rebecca Bradley from the Louisiana Hospital Association, and I would invite y'all to tune in to that as well. So, again, thanks everybody for participating, and we certainly wish you well till our next PMG call. Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, thank you.